Where did we finish the last game? With the best vacation. Okay. So we'd gotten to this point, I think. So this we derive by just writing out our power series expansion for the Bessel, the solution to Bessel's equation, and differentiating and plugging in. So the C0 and C1 terms come out, and then for Ck we have a recursion relation in terms of Ck minus 1. And we talked about this first one being the initial equation. So this first equation looks like r squared minus mu squared equals 0, assuming c0 isn't equal to 0. Why can we assume c0 is non-zero? So we chose a series of the form ck x to the k times c to the r. And x to the r. And we wanted to find an r and find the coefficient ck such that this solution works. So if we got c0 to be equal to 0, it just means we picked the wrong value of xr. So you can always assume that c0 is non-zero. So this gives us our equation for r. We get r equals plus or minus nu.
So.
Yes.
So you get that from the C0 term.
Yep.
From the C1 term, you would get r plus 1 squared minus b.
That's right.
Mu squared.
Yep. We're just getting to that now. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, there'll be a different r than C0.
That's right. So for the next term, we get C1 times this is equal to 0. So does this give us a contradiction for r?
C1 has to be 0.
So unless this holds for the new that we've chosen, we get that C1 has to be equal to 0. That's a good point. So you can see there's a special case if nu equals minus 1/2. Then this holds because nu can be equal to plus or minus 1/2. Set this equal to 0. Well, we'll go into that case afterwards. So let's just talk about the general case for now. So yeah, this second equation implies that C1 must be equal to 0. So we only get even terms in the expansion because you can see that subsequent to that, any coefficient Ck can be written in terms of the 1, 2 before it, so Ck minus 2. So if C1 is 0, then C3 is 0, C5 is 0, and so on. Okay? Is that clear? Yeah.
Sorry, I missed your argument for why C0 can be assumed to be non-zero. Why not C1?
So we're writing the solution in this term, right? In this form, right? R is arbitrary.
Oh,
we're
so
going to
shift.
Right.
Okay.
If C0 is 0, you just shift the value of R. Yeah. So you always look for a series solution in which C0 is non-zero because you have this thing multiplying. But for C1, that's not the case. We don't care if the other terms in the series expansion are zero. OK. So then for the general term, we have k plus r squared minus nu squared times ck equals minus ck minus 2. But we have r equals plus or minus nu. So we just get, as I said, a recursion relation for the CKs in terms of the earlier terms. And here I'm taking R equals plus nu. And we can always find a minus nu solution later by just replacing nu with minus nu everywhere. So let's take the plus nu solution. So simplifying this, we just get k times k plus 2 nu. So we just said that all the odd coefficients go to 0. So we know that k is always even. So let's let k equal to 2m. And this is just all to show the formula that I just gave you in one of the tutorials. So what do the coefficients look like for the best equations? So just replacing k with 2m. So now we just do the recursion, plug in the 2m minus 1, and so on. So we're multiplying together m terms. We get minus 1 to the m. Okay, so for this term, when we multiply, when we substitute in the cm minus 2, we get a m minus 1. Next term, we get an m minus 2, and so on. And for this term, we get a m plus nu minus 1, and so on. Okay. And we have m terms, so we get minus 1 to the m and a 2 to the 2m. So this part is just m factorial. And this part is slightly different. And this is the point at which we introduced the gamma function that you saw in the tutorial. So it's usual to choose C0 to be this form. And at this point, all you need to know about the gamma function is that gamma of mu plus 1, well, in general, x plus 1, is x times gamma of x. And I give you this property in the tutorial. So it's a generalization of factorial. And I think you'll be talking about it a bit more with Dan next week. So for the moment, we just need this property. So now, can I put this here? This becomes minus 1 to the m. Can everybody? Yeah, you can see the bottom of the board. So just substituting m for c, 0. But these terms, because of this property, all collapse down to give us gamma of m plus nu plus 1. So you can just do it term by term. So this gives us gamma of nu plus 2 and so on. Is that clear? Any questions? And this is the form that you got in the tutorial question. So this is what the power series for the Bessel equation looks like. And the point of this is just when you see the Bessel equation and also the Legendre equation that we talked about previously during the year, you'll be able to say, oh, I know what that looks like. I know the solution for that. So just so that you don't get scared by it. Okay, so I mentioned here that there's one special case. So let's just return to that. You never know which is which. This is the French. So let's look at the nu equals to a half case. So we have nu squared equals to 1/4. And in the first equation, r squared minus nu squared equals 0. We get r can be equal to plus or minus. And in the second equation, r plus 1 squared minus nu squared times c1 equals 0. If we take the r equals to 1/2, this doesn't, we again need to take c1 equals 0, as in the case we previously talked about, the general case. If we take r equals minus 1/2, then this term goes to 0. Everybody see that? Okay. So c1 doesn't have to be 0. So now we get two arbitrary constants, c0 and c1. And again, we can now use this recursion relation for the odd as well as the even coefficient. So this form here becomes ck equals minus okay in the case where nu equals to 1/2. Right. So we take the nu equals minus 1/2 term. And it turns out, I'll come back to this at the end, that the series for nu equals to 1/2 is exactly the second series that's generated using this one. So yeah, you can take nu equals to 1/2 and you generate a series with one arbitrary constant, as in the other cases. If we take nu equals minus 1/2, we get two arbitrary. Zero times divided by two m factorial. And you can verify that. And for the odd case, C2m plus 1 is minus 1 to the m C1. Real. So does anybody recognize these series? Anybody? So let's write it out. We get x minus 1/2 c0. So what does the Stephen term look like? 1 minus x squared over 2 plus x to the 4 over 4 factorial, so on. C1. But this is just cos. And this is just sine. So nu equals 1/2 is kind of a nice case where you can write the solution in closed form. And if you look at this sine x series, to get back to your question, Andre, this has leading order x to the 1/2, actually, because if you multiply in the exponent. And that's exactly the series you would have got if we started with nu equals to 1/2. Yeah?
Yeah, I guess I missed this. Why isn't c1 equals 0?
Why isn't c1 equals 0? So this is the same equation as we had before. Mm-hmm. And previously we said, you know, either this is 0 or this is 0, so c1 has to be 0. If we take r equals minus 1/2, then this first term collapses to 0. Sorry?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So we don't need to take C1. C1 to be 0 in that case. And the last thing, when we talked about general, this extended power series method, I said that if the two powers, the two roots of the initial equation, which are these two, differ by an integer, then you sometimes have to have this log solution. I wrote in this general form for you with a constant, said sometimes the constant is 0. So this is an example when you don't actually need the log term. You just get two nice series out of this way. And then the last thing I wanted to show you about these is using the recursion relations, which again, you're all very familiar with, right, in the tutorial. So we have a recursion relation. Well, first of all, let me just specify J 1/2 x is the sine x term, right? Yeah, this is what we just talked about. And the constants here, the square root 2 over pi, is just convention. So don't worry about that. Any general solution of Bessel's equation with nu equals 1/2 can be written as a combination of these two with some arbitrary constant in front of either one. So we still get back some arbitrary constant multiplying. So let's just look at one step of the recursion relation. So looking at nu equals to 1/2, we can generate the series for nu equals 3 over 2. Just rewrite this. So if nu is a half, well, we know what j half and j minus a half look like. So we can just plug in directly to find j of a half plus 1, j3 over 2. And using the same recursion relation, we can show something similar for j minus 3 halves. And the point of this is just that for half integer nu, we can generate all the Bessel's equations starting with j, Bessel functions starting with j equals a half. And they all have this form where there's some like polynomial of x multiplying sine x or cos x. So now anytime you see a half integer nu, you know what the solution looks like. So one more comment about this solution. I said this is J3 over 2, the Bessel function of 3 halves. So we would expect the leading order x to be x to the power 3 halves. But it doesn't look like it. Why is that?
Yes. Are you missing x?
The x, I've just multiplied. So there was an x to the power of a half here, and I've multiplied by x. We get x to the power of 3 over 2. Is that your question? So this I've just rewritten here. Nu is equal to a half. Oh, yeah, OK, I'm sorry. OK? Yes, good. Thank you. So this, in fact, does have leading order x to the power 3 halves, which you can see if you expand out the sine x and the cos x. So the first term here is x divided by x to 3 halves gives you 1 over x to the half. But the first term here is also 1 over root x in the cos x term. So the first order term cancels. And the one you're left with is of order x to 3 over 2. OK. And we're not going to talk about Bessel functions of the second kind too much. I just want to mention if nu is not an integer, then j minus nu and j nu are two linearly independent solutions. And the full solution of your Bessel's equation can be written as combinations of them. If nu is an integer, that's not the case. And j nu and j minus nu are linearly dependent. They're just proportional to one another. So we end up with this, what's called Bessel function of the second kind. And you can find it by reduction of order. And we talked briefly about what the second linearly independent solution looks like for power series, the extended power series method, the last day. And all I want to point out about this is that this has a singularity. It's not very nicely behaved at x equals 0. It's like a log x term. function of the second kind. And just so that you've seen it, I'll give you the formal definition. And this is to be understood as a limit in the case where nu is an integer, because this goes to zero underneath the line. And yeah, I'm just giving you the formal definition so that you've seen it. I don't want to spend time talking about it. Yeah.
What is we written y nu?
Sorry?
Should it be k nu? Or
oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, what? This should be y. They generally call it y. Thank you. Okay, so in the tutorial, well, I'll let you finish. Just erase some stuff over here while you're still writing. Is everybody finished over here? Anybody not? Oh, you're still writing. Sure. Okay, in that case. Okay, so in the tutorial, you had a problem that involves separation of variables for a PDE, partial differential equation. Is everybody comfortable with that? Is anybody not? Anybody? Okay, so we're going to talk briefly about separation of variables. Since everybody said they're comfortable about it, I'll leave out the easy example and just mention it as something you're probably familiar with. So the easy example is getting from the time-dependent Schrodinger equation to the time-independent Schrodinger equation if you have a potential that doesn't depend on t. So separation of variables involves just substituting for a separable form. And you get an oscillatory solution for f of t and an eigenvalue equation for psi of x. So just a point to make sure everybody understands this. taking this ansatz that the solution is separable and plugging it in to find f of t and psi of t gives me solutions that are explicitly separable. So the variables t and x appear in different functions. Does that mean that all solutions to this equation are explicitly separable? Can somebody explain why? Yes.
Because the equation is linear, so we can also take zero positions of different solutions, and the zero position of two separate solutions is not necessarily different.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Did everybody understand that? So, of course, as we've been doing all along, if we have independent solutions, we can just take linear superpositions of them. And that linear superposition is itself a solution of the equation that you started with, because it's the linear equation. So we look for solutions of this type. We find separable solutions. But then we can add independent separable solutions. And the resulting solution is not necessarily separable. OK, so the other example I wanted to talk about is a spherically symmetric potential. So that you can see also where Legendre polynomials come in, where they become important. So now let's assume we've done separation of variables in the 3D case, and we've ended up with the time-independent Schrodinger equation, which looks like So this is an eigenvalue problem. You find the E's for which this can hold. And you'll talk a little bit more about that with David, I think, next week. And now let's suppose that V is only a function of R. So if V is a function of R, it sort of makes sense to use spherical coordinates to solve the equation. And we expect the equation to be separable in spherical coordinates. So what does the Laplacian look like in spherical coordinates? And again, we look for separable solutions. So let's first separate R from theta and phi. We look for solutions of this form. Okay. Everybody good so far? And these are what are called spherical harmonics, as it turns out. So I'm interested in the spherical harmonics terms. That's what we're going to talk about. But of course, for a given V of R, you can also look at the R of R function, find the function of R. So for example, for a hydrogen atom, this is a sort of canonical example, is the hydrogen atom, where you have a potential that only depends on the distance between the proton and the electron. So what happens when we perform separation of variables? We get this equation for y. So because everyone says you're comfortable with it, I'm not going to do it explicitly, but you all you have to do is substitute this into the above equation, divide through by R and Y, and find that one side depends only on theta and phi, and the other side depends only on R. So then we can set them both equal to a constant. And because I know what the solution looks like, we're going to choose the constant to look like L times L plus 1. And at the moment, that can still be arbitrary, because L could be arbitrary. And we get an equation for R also. So let's do separation of variables one more time. And this time we choose a separation constant to be m squared. So this now is our equation for the theta dependence. And this is our equation for the phi dependence. Okay, so this is nice and easy, the solution. And again, m is a separation constant that I've chosen to write as m squared. And generally, at some point in the problem, you impose some physical constraint, something that you expect physically. Like you want the solution to be bounded, or some explicit boundary condition based on the physical problem. So in this case, phi is an angular coordinate. It's the angle around the z-axis. And you know it's periodic. When you go from 0 to 2 phi, you come back on yourself. So we expect these solutions to be continuous across 2 phi. And that's why we chose the form of the separation constant to be m squared. If m is an integer, then these are well behaved across that boundary. Okay. Okay, so this is the equation I want to look at. because we haven't talked so much about the physical significance of the Lagrange polynomials yet. So we make a substitution that W equals cos of theta. Then we can transform this equation to the following form. So I skipped a couple of lines of algebra. If you haven't seen this before, I encourage you to check that this equation really does transform to this form. Okay, so does this look at all familiar from the tutorials? This is a little bit like Legendre's equation, except we have this extra term here. If m was equal to 0, that would be exactly Legendre's equation that we already talked about. Okay. So in the m equals 0 case, we know what the solutions look like to this. The two linearly independent solutions are a polynomial, a finite polynomial, and something which doesn't terminate and only converges for less than 1. So we would know that the solutions we're interested in, because we're looking at a physical problem, are the terminating polynomials, the Legendre polynomials. Everybody remember this from the tutorial? You have two solutions of that form. So if m is non-zero, then this is what's called the associated Legendre equation. And you can show by just direct substitution that the solutions are of the following form. So they are functions which depend on L and M. We have two arbitrary constants here, L and M. Where these are the Legendre polynomials. So the first step to show this is to transform Q as 1 minus W squared M over 2 times B and show what equation this satisfies. And then show that if you take Legendre's equation and differentiate it m times, you get the same equation. And again, just to stress the point, we're interested in solutions that have some physical significance. So we only care about the bounded solutions. So we take the Legendre polynomial here. and not the not the ones with the singularity at w equals 1. And together with these solutions, this gives us our spherical harmonics. So this solution. So this is just some normalization constant. And this is the form of the spherical harmonics. So this is why Legendre's equation is important. Anytime you have a spherical symmetry in Laplace's equation, in the Schrodinger equation, you see solutions of this form. And one more comment on this. The relation to angular momentum. If you write out the operator corresponding to the total angular momentum explicitly, then you get exactly this operator that we saw earlier. So this one. And so these solutions are eigenfunctions of the angular momentum operator. And this L plus 1 corresponds to the value of the angular momentum. Okay. So for example, in the hydrogen atom, you have energy levels labeled by N. And then you have your angular momentum quantum number labeled by L. And M labels the z component of the angular momentum, which you may remember from undergrad. Okay. So I skipped a lot of the details there because I really wanted to get onto WKB approximation. Are there any questions about what we just talked about? So if you haven't seen it before, I strongly encourage you to go through some of these steps that I indicated, to show that these really are the solutions to that equation. So now, whenever you see a Legendre or a Bessel function, or equation, you'll know what the solutions look like. So now let's move on to something completely different, which is the WKB approximation technique for the last 10 minutes. So let's consider the one-dimensional Schrodinger equation. And I'm going to go ahead and show you the approximation technique, and then as we're going along, tell you when it's applicable. So if we defined this quantity to be equal to some k, so let's define k of x to be the square root of this. And in the case where, so this is where this is positive, in the case where it's negative, we'll define it to be complex. So now this just looks like some k squared. So far no approximation. So far everything's exact. So all I've done is to define this constant to be equal to, sorry, not constant, this function to be equal to some function k of x squared. And you know that if k was a constant, we would know what the solutions to this look like. There are either some oscillating solutions if k is complex, or some exponential solutions if k is real. So the idea of WKB is to look at if this potential is slowly varying in some sense, and we'll come back to what that means shortly, then we make some approximation. So let's just write it down. So if the potential was constant, then k would also be constant. And the solutions would be of this form. If k isn't constant, but is somehow slowly varying, again, I'll get to what I mean by that in what sense shortly. So the idea is to try a solution that looks a little bit like this. So we take psi of x like this. Okay. Can you still read okay? The board's gotten really. Just speak up if you can't read. Okay, so we're going to try a solution of this form. So what equation does the W satisfy? So now we're looking to solve for this Wx, which is some sort of phase parameter. It's a bit like a phase. So let's just figure out explicitly what equation W satisfies. these are just our expressions for psi and psi. Psi prime and psi double prime. And finally, we get that W must obey the equation. This one. And now we get to our first mathematical formulation of what the approximation is. We suppose that this term is much smaller than this one. And as a first approximation, we neglect this term and solve the equation. And then we'll do one more iteration. So for our first approximation, is just neglecting the second order term and solving directly for W. Our next approximation so we do an iteration. We take our approximate solution, put it back into here, and solve for a slightly better solution. So our first order approximation we'll call W1 of x, and it will satisfy okay, so going back to this equation and just plugging in W0 here and finding our next iterative solution for W1. We're nearly done. Okay, so W0, second derivative is just equal to first derivative, okay. So there are two ways you can approach this. In this case, we've found a first order solution and iterated the equation. So put our first order solution back in and found the second order solution in that way by iterating the equation. The other way you can do it is to expand W explicitly as a power series in h-bar squared, in h-bar, rather. So now our approximation is W1 of x. And because we previously assumed this second term, the second derivative, was very small compared to the first one, we can now apply this approximation here. So here we get So for W1 prime, we just need to take the square root of this. Let's just take the square root here. And then to find W1, we just integrate. Okay. And our approximation is that this term is small compared to 1. So let's plug back in for the wave function, which is what we were looking for. What does the wave function look like?
Excuse me?
Yes.
Since you have it already to power a half, shouldn't be just not I over 2, just I?
The I over 2 should be here, but not here. That's what you're saying, right? Yeah, thanks. Okay, so this is our approximate solution to the wave function. And just want to talk a little bit more about the condition. So ended up that this was the condition we used, k prime of x divided by k squared of x is much less than 1. But k of x is just this energy function. And we can show that k prime of x over k of x is equal to this. So the derivative of v, the potential with respect to x, divided by the energy difference. So this is our condition for when this is a good approximation. Here I've replaced 1 over k with lambda. OK, there should be a 2 pi here somewhere. So what does this mean? So this is the fractional variation in v per unit length. So this is a dv dx divided by the difference between e and v of x. So this is something like a fractional variation and multiplied by the wavelength. So what this condition tells us is that the potential v shouldn't change very much in the order of a wavelength. And that's the sense in which it should be slowly the potential should be slowly varying in order to apply this approximation.
The wavelength is the wavelength which is derived from the k.
Right.
The delta.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, so the wavelength is just defined by the difference in energy. So one more comment, I know we're over time. When this is zero, or close to zero, near a classical turning point, this is never a good approximation. So you can't use it in those regions. So in those regions, you need to use another solution, and then you do some kind of matching to match up this approximate solution with the approximate solution in that area. So this is just an example of an approximation method that you can use. So as Geoffrey told you yesterday, all these nice analytic methods we have don't solve most of the equations we know, in which case we often need numerical solutions. And the other kind of tools we need are approximation techniques. And this is just one example of one. And I know that was a little bit rushed. If anyone has any questions, feel free to come and see me. So that's it, thank you. And I will try to get solutions to the tutorials online probably early next week. They're not there yet, but they will be. Okay. Thanks.